We're in the 11th verse of chapter 12. Revelation 12, verse 11. And here's a brief outline of what we're going to look at tonight. We're looking right now at the eternal struggle in the 12th chapter, verse 1 through 6. We was introduced to the woman, the dragon, the man-child. And now we're in verse 11. That puts us right here in the description there, in the text of the war in heaven, where the devil's cast out. And he comes down and makes war on the earth. So that's where we're at, verse 11. We pretty much covered that 11th verse. It says, and they overcame him by the word, by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. And so we discussed the blood of the Lamb, and we're going to go into the word of the testimony. But we'll connect into it in the middle of it. Peter, 1 Peter 1, verse 18 and 19 that we was looking at when we closed our study last week. When you take out the all of the negatives and leave the positives in that verse, it merely says, you were redeemed with precious blood as a lamb without spot and blemish, even the blood of Christ. And that speaks of Calvary, doesn't it? Romans 6 makes it speak of baptism and of my death with Jesus. Remember Romans 6, 3 through 6? Know ye not that so many of us as were baptized into Christ were baptized into his death, were buried with him, we raised to walk in newness of life. Knowing this, Paul says in verse 7, that the old man that went into the baptistry when he was labeled damned and doomed by God because of sin, he's now contacted the blood in the baptistry, and he's now cleansed and pure, and he's born anew, and he has a different direction in life. And so he's baptized into Christ, but Christ is baptized. As he died, we're baptized into his death, I should say. And we're buried as he was. We're raised from the dead as he was by the authority and the power of God. We're raised a son of God. And the old man died there. And the new man came out, Paul talks about in Romans 6, with a new determination, a new purpose in life. He's one who walks according to the Spirit. He's led by the Spirit. He's willing to let God lead him and teach him. 1 John 1, 7. We walk in the light as he's in the light. We have fellowship one with another, and the blood of his Son continually cleanses us. And so Romans 6 makes it speak of baptism, my death with Jesus, because that's what happens. I was to die in the baptistry. The old man went in there and he died, and he don't come out. He's not supposed to come out. And 1 John chapter 1 makes it speak of the walk with Jesus, walking in the light. And then if you want to make it really powerful, if you're preaching on it, right in the middle of your sermon, you could sing Nothing But the Blood. It says, and they overcame him by the word of their testimony. Not only by the blood of the Lamb, but by the word of their testimony. There's three things involved here. The blood of the Lamb, the word of the testimony, and they love not their lives unto the death. Now, life I find kind of interesting because it leads people into the age, if they don't learn it beforehand, it leads them into an age where they come to see life as a drudgery, as a toil, as a labor. David looked upon life with one intent in the Psalms. He said, Lord, let me live long enough to tell of your grace to one more generation. And so we begin to see the reality and the clarity of life as we get older. It's not what we thought it was when we was 20 and 25 and 30. We had obligations back then that blinded us to the reality of one day when we raised our families, we've pretty well finished our course, we're sitting waiting to go home. And in that wait, we're a light to the, not only the community, but to our brothers and sisters. And so we never get out of responsibility. So they overcame him, the devil, by the word of their testimony. Now I think we need to tell our brethren and ourselves, actually, that we're not going to heaven unless you've got a word of testimony. Can you imagine a man with any gratitude for his salvation not speaking about it? We speak about what we love, don't we? All right, so and so I'm going to have to be honest enough to tell folks, if you're not telling others about Jesus, if you say, I can't tell others about Jesus, let me tell you one other thing that you can't do. You can't go to heaven when you die. Because the here in verse 11, the victory is found in three things. The blood of the covenant, the word of your testimony, and you love not your lives unto the death. Now those are just not words. They have a definite meaning to them. And there's the three-pronged picture of success. As I mentioned last week, Klein Payton, a friend of mine, he preached a sermon once on Revelation 12 and verse 11 on this text, and he called it the snapshot of victory. That's a very catchy title for what that verse says. So this verse says they overcame him because of the word of their testimony. There's not anybody that can't talk about what they love, and that's the whole thrust of it. That man or woman does not exist that can't talk about what they love. They just don't exist. Even if they can't speak, they'll do it with their hands. You cut off their hands and they'll tap it out with their feet. The fact is, they're just going to find some way to talk about what they love. In 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2, Paul told Timothy, the things that thou hast heard from me among many witnesses, commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. And that's the progression of time and Christianity. It's teaching faithful men that they'll be able to teach others also, that they'll be able to teach others also, that they'll be able to teach others also. It has a progression to it from generation to generation. And the person that says he doesn't have the ability to either is either because he's ignorant or he's unfaithful or both. Now, ignorance is cured by study. Faithfulness is cured by repentance. And so the fellow who doesn't have the ability, he needs to do one of two things, either repent and study. Faithful men have the ability when they got the word. And it says in the text, they love not their lives unto the death. Well, look at Luke 9 and verse 23. It says, and he said to them all, if any man come after me, let him do what? Deny himself. One of the hardest things, I guess, that some people have to do is deny themselves. And take up his cross daily and follow me. It's a daily vocation, isn't it? Every day. As long as you're here. And for an invitation song, if you're preaching that, you might sing all to Jesus, I surrender. There's nothing easy about life, is there? When Jesus invited the Jews in Matthew 11, 28 through 30, He said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden." Life, that's the nature of life, isn't it? Laboring and heavy laden. And he said, "I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls." And so there's still the burden, but it's not near like the world. Peter said, "If any man suffer, let him suffer as a Christian." You don't want to suffer like the world suffers. Like the drug addict has to suffer. Sleeping on the pavement in the spittle and everything of those drunks and everything on the skid row. You can just imagine. The world leads you into some heavy responsibilities and burdens. Maybe you're an outlaw. It's led you there and you're running from the law. And so Peter was right. If any man suffer, let him suffer as a Christian. But you're going to suffer. Life is designed that way. In your maturity, you're going to suffer toward that, aren't you? Peter said in 1 Peter 5 and verse 6, to humble yourself under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you in due time. There's a time frame there. In your exaltation, in your lifting up, and placed on a rock that's firm, that's able to stand in the face of death and all the things, the maladies of life, and then notice verse 11 of that same context, just a couple verses on. It said, you humble yourself and God will exalt you in due time. And then verse 11 says, after you've struggled a while. Is there a struggle in Christianity? There's a struggle in life, isn't there? And you don't want to struggle like the world does. You're happy when you struggle in Christ because there's an eternal reward for it. But he said, if any man... after you struggle a while, God will do what? Verse 11. He will establish, strengthen, and settle you.
Merle, what does it say in Ecclesiastes about life?
I didn't hear you, Brian.
What does it say in Ecclesiastes about life?
Yeah.
It's a source of hell.
Yeah, it shows that it's all vanity.
Yeah.
It's all striving after the wind.
Please, John. It is a sort of bad.
All right, so that's what the Lord said in Luke 9:23. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, a responsibility, and follow me daily. Alright, verse 12. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the earth and of the sea, because the devil is gone down unto you, having great wrath, knowing that he hath but a short time. The devil knows he's doomed, but he won't give up. That's the way with hatred, isn't it? Hatred leads a man eventually to die for his hatred if he has that large of a hatred. So the devil knows that he has a short stick. He doesn't have the power that he'd like to have. He's limited. And you've got to hit more often with a short stick, and he doesn't have very long. Psalms 90 and verse 10 says that he's a diligent worker, but he's only got 70 years, if by reason of strength 80 with you and me. And he does his best to level us, doesn't he? Now, if you've ever... there's a newsman on the radio. He's dead now. can't think of his name.
Paul Harvey.
Paul Harvey, yeah.
That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Paul Harvey.
He made it very clear to the whole nation. Every year he made it his point to condemn education as we know it. Because he said the schools, the education, the colleges, the elementary school, that's the devil's design for human destruction. And you can see it pretty clear now because the devil's really manifested himself in the last year, hadn't he? He wants to teach things and pornography to our children, to kindergartners. They can't read, they can't write, they can't arithmetic, but they know all about sex and things that they have not the maturity to handle and deal with. And so Paul Harvey was right as he warned the nation about secular education. And that's what gave rise to a lot of homeschooling. His people looked at that and saw it, as he did. And so the devil just got a short time with us, and so he's going to have to work real hard, and he does. He's a diligent worker. In 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, Peter said, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour." Now, the only kind of lion that devours men is those who've received the death stroke. And the devil has received the death stroke. And this picture here in Revelation 12, as he comes down to earth, wrathful, knowing that he has but a short time to convince men and women of and lead them to hell. And so... So the reason he's in such a frenzy, as we see him here in Revelation 12, he knows he doesn't have long to live either. And so our citizenship is in heaven. Philippians 3 and verse 20, heaven is our home office. And meanwhile, we are pilgrims and strangers. Hebrews 11, verse 13. Now, we've never preached on that, really, to any great levity. But we're not down here to fight Saddam Hussein's battles or any of the great men's battles down here on earth. We're not here to fight wars for the government. They're governments of men. We don't belong to them governments. We need to take the advice of the Lord in his actions and his words. When he was upon the earth, he did not involve himself with the politics. Because you're not going to be successful anyway. You can go to school and get on the school board, and you can have honest intentions of trying to correct those things. You're not going anywhere. Oh, you might can. They might give way to a few things that's moral because they don't know what to do with it, but you're not going to convince the world. Jesus done told you most of the world's going to hell. Wide is the gate, broad is the way that leads to hell, and many there be that enter therein. All right, so that's just the way it is. And so we're pilgrims and strangers down here. That's what Hebrews 11:13 says. We're pilgrims and strangers. We don't fight this world's battles. We'd be lucky if we could close our eyes to the politics of this world. Now, they get to us because we're having to live in them. You know, we're like Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They didn't do anything to cause that Babylonian captivity for 70 years. It wasn't their fault, and people like them. And I'm sure there was a lot more that was righteous like Daniel and his friends. God just didn't have any reason to tell us who they were. He just mentioned these because they had a lesson to pass on to us. But nevertheless, remember Daniel, the first chapter in verse 8, it says that Daniel and his friends purposed in their heart as they were going from Jerusalem to Babylon. in captivity. They purposed in their heart not to defile themselves with the king's dainties. They were faithful to God. Did God see them through? Yes, he did. And that's why that book was written, so that we could see the power of God working in us if we allow it. So we're not interested in the politics necessarily of today's world. Men's been foaming and raging at the mouth and in warfare since the beginning of time. In fact, in Matthew 24, Jesus said, there'll be wars and rumors of wars. How long? He said, to the end of time. And yet, in the scriptures, in Isaiah 2:2-4, he declared that the nation would not lift up sword against nation anymore, and neither would they learn war. Well, there's a lot of people puts their false hope in something that's not real. It's real what Isaiah said, but he was speaking about the people of these nations that come into the church, to the mountain of Jehovah's house, and they're the people who will beat their swords into plowshares. They'll take an instrument of war, a sword, a spear, and they'll beat it into something that is productive for mankind, plows and things of that nature. But that's only talking about, it's not talking about the end of wars. There could be wars till the end of time, Jesus said. And so you and I need to learn what kingdom we're of. You know, the Lord told Pilate, Pilate asked him, are you king of the Jews? And he said, that's right. Are you king of this kingdom? That's right. But my kingdom is not of this world. And we have a hard time seeing that, because we think our job as an American citizen is to get out here and fight in politics. No, you're not going to get anywhere. You're going to be spitting into the wind. It's just going to come back on you. You're not going anywhere with that. Did the Lord get anywhere with the world at large? How many followed him after he rose from the dead? In Acts 1, there was only 120. You mean after all the miracles and the power that he illustrated, those Jews believed the power? There was no doubt about that, because they welcomed him into Jerusalem as a mighty king. They laid down palm leaves and they cried out, Hosanna, or save now. They wanted deliverance from Rome. They didn't want deliverance from sin. But they saw his power, that he could take one sword in their estimation and change it into a million. He could take one horse, a horse of battle, of war, pulling chariots and things, and he could multiply them as many as he wanted. He could raise the dead, because they saw him do it. And boy, they didn't deny his power, they denied his purpose. They denied his mission, and that's what they're doing today. But you and I need to understand that Jesus told Pilate, my kingdom's not of this world, else would my servants fight. You know, he told Peter just a few hours before that, put up your sword. How can we fulfill the will of God if we fight? And of course, you can go from there with that theme, but I don't know how you could do the will of God and fight for these governments. They promise you that you're fighting for freedom. Well, that's been a lie since day one, hasn't it? Since Adam and Eve's time, that's been a lie. Fight for freedom. Freedom has many different definitions. It just depends on which warlord you're talking to. Like my dad used to tell me, he said, son, you got to understand that the definition of freedom to a lot of men is in the end of a gun barrel. After you've killed off everybody, you're free, you know. Well, he was right. And so we're just pilgrims and strangers. That's what the Lord called us. I'm a pilgrim. I'm a stranger. I don't like what's going on, but I know it's futile to go up against them. Look at poor old Trump. The fella, in all honesty and sincerity, determination, he went up against them, didn't he? What did the majority do to him? What are they fixing to do now? They're going to arrest him Tuesday. Yeah. And they've trumped up charge after charge, and they're doing everything they can to keep him out of running for office. I'm still going to vote for him, but that's only because I got the privilege to vote. But I know it ain't going to go anywhere. But I sure admire the man for what he attempted to do. Well, he did do what he did do. Made them nations cough up the money that they've been, that we've been paying for. And so, anyway, I don't understand it all, but I do know we're pilgrims and strangers here. And the President of the United States is not going to come and knock on your door and ask you your opinion about anything. He's not interested, neither is this world. And if he's a successful president, he won't ask you anyway, because he's pleasing the people. He's a people pleaser. You know, you got, they lick their finger to see which way the wind's blowing on every issue in life. That's what makes them successful. And so for you to think, you're awful naive if you think you could change anything. You might as well be like Daniel and his friends and just live out life in the bondage that we're here, recognizing you're pilgrims and strangers. And you got a right to vote? Well, sure, I would suggest that you vote. You do what you can. I'll speak out of what's right and what's just and what's proper, and I'll vote that way too if I'm given an opportunity. But I'm not going to pick up a rifle and go to war for some warlord that's lying to me. And they, you know, that's why soldiers are always about 19, 20 years old, because they're 10 foot tall and bulletproof in their mind. Dumber than a post. I was that way. I don't think a man really develops until he's about 30 years old. He sure shouldn't get married until he's 30, because otherwise the only thing that fascinates him is his lust for women, and he run out there and get himself in all kinds of trouble. It's very few men that has the ability to look at those things in reality and to make the right choice. Of a woman to live with, or a man to live with, either way, works both ways. So the dragon persecutes the woman there, beginning in verse 13, but she is protected and nourished for 3.5 years. Now, I think we've already mentioned that once, and we're going to see many times throughout the book of Revelation, this 3.5 years, this time and a half of time, this 42 months, it's all the same period of time. It just means that it's an incomplete period of time, that's all. It's a short period of time for a certain thing, for either judgment or persecution or whatever. And verse 13, and when the dragon saw that he was cast down to the earth, now the figure is here, that he's lost power that once he had. He now has limited power. And so he persecuted the woman that brought forth the man-child. So he persecuted the covenant people of God, because that's who the woman represents. That's not Mary. That's not Mary. That's the faithful of God. Her pregnancy was the pregnancy of prophecy. All of the prophets spoke of the beauty and grandeur of one day God establishing a kingdom of righteousness, peace, and joy, and all of that. And a king that would reign over it. A man-child that would rule the nations with a rod of iron, that was in the 12th chapter here, in the earlier part. And so the devil has lost power that once he had. He's cast down to the earth, and so he has limited power, and he persecuted the woman that brought forth the man-child. So he persecuted the covenant people of God. So that woman in Revelation 12 represents the covenant people of God. Covenant people in the Old Testament, covenant people in the New Testament. She labors in travail as a woman ready to give birth. Give birth to what? Well, symbolically, to give birth to this man-child that's going to rule the nation with a rod of iron. They were anxious because prophecy had set them on the edge of anticipation as they anxiously waited for this one who was spoken of in prophecy. Verse 14, and there was given to the woman the two wings of a great eagle. Now, after the cross, the woman would at least include shortly some Gentiles in this picture. And that's the figure of Romans 11, verse 11, and also Romans 15, verse 9, where we Gentiles have been made partakers of their spiritual blessings. We've been made partakers with the Jews. And so we're in this picture faithful covenant people of God. The two wings of the great eagle, it says, where's that come from? Where in the Old Testament did God give covenant people, his covenant people, two wings of an eagle? See, we're trying to allow the Old Testament to explain to us all of these figures. We don't dare have the right to put a private interpretation on anything. And so, realizing this, we allow God through the beginning of the Old Testament to explain to us what these symbols mean. Well, so where in the Old Testament did God give his covenant people two wings of an eagle? Exodus 19 and verse 4. And here's what it says. Ye have seen what I did, God says, unto the Egyptians, how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. And so what does eagle's wings represent? Transport to protection. And so this is bringing the woman into the wilderness for protection, merely a symbol of God's strength. He delivers us. He takes us in and protects us from the strength of from the hostility of the devil. And the text says that she might fly into the wilderness unto her place, where she is nourished for a time and a half a time. There's that period of time again, that brief period of time. And she's protected from the face of the serpent. And so this period of time is a period of protection and nourishment. That's all it is. It's not finished yet. It's not finished. That's why it's a time and half time. How did they fly into the wilderness of protection and nourishment? Surely he did it by the nature of the church. He certainly didn't do it by delivering the church out of the world physically, but he did it by delivering the church out of the world spiritually and putting them where? Well, in Ephesians 1, verse 3, it says, in heavenly places. And so where did he fly us off to? Heavenly places. That's a spiritual realm. That's a realm where we are nourished for a time and a half a time. Are we protected from the devil? Yeah. You know, for a long time I wondered, why did God agree with the devil and tear down the hedge around Job and allow the serpent to come in against Job, because he lost his seven sons and three daughters and everything he owned? Well, we find out that it's quite a benefit for old Job. He benefited from it because he's no longer looking at things in the physical, because in the 42nd chapter he said, I had heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. You see God a lot different in the suffrage of life. You see God a lot different. But the point I'm getting is, why did the serpent said, God said, if you considered my servant Job, not another man like him in all the earth, a righteous and upright man. And the serpent said, yeah, But that's because you built a hedge about him, so I can't touch him. And God said, okay, I'll give you the power to do whatsoever you will, only spare his life. And so the devil gets his power from God. He's not the all-powerful one. He's limited in his power. And when Christ went to Calvary and ascended up into heaven in the aftermath of it, the devil lost his heavenly, his power, as it were, on high. He's limited in power now. And he's come down with great wrath, and he comes against the woman, and God takes her off on the wings of an eagle into a place of protection. And of course, we know that to be the church, the place where we're nourished for a time, time and a half a time. We're not here forever, just a time, time and a half a time, a brief period of time. And then we'll go to our reward that's eternal. So that period of time is a period of protection and nourishment. And he flew her off on the wings of an eagle and into a place of protection and nourishment. That's the church. Because that's, as a family, that's where we gain our strength and our vitality. It's from his word and from fellowship. It's no wonder to me that we read about the early church in Acts 2:42, those 3,000 Jews that obeyed the gospel. It says that they continued unbrokenly in fellowship, breaking bread, and in prayer. They recognized the benefits of fellowship one with another, because there's where we're strengthened with from one another. So in this picture here, he didn't deliver the church out of the world physically, but he did by delivering the church out of the world spiritually and put them where? In heavenly places. That's, again, the book of Ephesians. All right, now there's the woman flying away like an eagle. So what does the dragon do? Verse 15. And the serpent cast out of his mouth after the woman water. Now imagine trying to drown an eagle. That doesn't make any sense if you're taking this literally. Because it makes no sense at all. You don't carry away an eagle by overflowing the Amazon River. An eagle would just soar above the water, and that's where we soar. We soar on the wings of an eagle. You remember Revelation, Isaiah, the 40th chapter, and the last two verses? They that wait on Jehovah, what are they waiting for? Nourishment, understanding, strength, and all of those things that Peter said, if you humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, he'll establish strength and settle you. And he'll lift you up on high. All right, because of that, it also says that we soar like the eagle, far above all the difficulties down here below. These governments and these politics can roar and holler and scream at one another and shoot at one another. We're just here as pilgrims and strangers traveling through. And in the meantime, we soar above all the difficulties in this world. We're not like the buzzard. That's where the world is, like buzzards. They fly low in the heat of the noonday sun, and they eat dead things. We soar like the eagle. God has given us that authority, that power, to soar on high things. We eat live things. They claim that an eagle can see a mouse a mile away and can dart down and swoop him up faster than any of our jet engines and planes that we've got. We've never done anything as great as God done. He's given us a prototype of everything we've ever made, hasn't he? Yeah. When you want a figure of protecting the woman, what do you give her? Well, Exodus 19's two wings. Two wings of an eagle. When you want a figure which represents the devil's lies, what do you use? Well, Psalms 18, verse 4 and 5, and verse 15 through 17. Or Psalms 124, excuse me, verse 4 through 8. Or Isaiah 8, or Isaiah 57. And there's a bunch of other passages that discusses the devil's lies as a river of water. That's how it's described, and that's what it is here. He pours out a flood of water out of his mouth, is the symbolic picture. And we see in all those verses there the same picture. Flooding from the devil is like his deception, and things are like water that he pours out to drown us. And so water is a figure of the devil's evil influence and power. In fact, Isaiah 57 verse 20 says, the wicked are like the troubled sea. There's water. They cast up mire and dirt. That's all they do. You ever been to the seashore and see the turbulent sea, the tide come in, and it's brown because it's washed the sand and bringing in all the filth? That's the description the Bible has of this world and its people. That's all they do is stir up trouble. Over and over again, the Bible uses water in the form of a river, in the form of a sea, and many forms to indicate the devil's evil influence. And so that's just a figure of the devil trying to destroy the woman with the evil influence and lies. And it's described as him pouring out a flood of water out of his mouth to devour her, to drown her. But she's on the wings of an eagle. She's soaring far above the Amazon River. You ain't going to drown that eagle. And verse 16, and the earth helped the woman. And so the woman has plenty of help. God's helped her, as we've seen in this picture. The angels helped her. They cast out the devil. She's got two wings that flew her off into protection. And now the earth is helping her in this chapter. And so God provides for the woman's help. Does God provide help for us? Yes, he does. Yes, he does. It's there. We just don't always take advantage of it. And until the doctor tells us that our life is swiftly coming to an end, and then all of a sudden we get serious about it, don't we? But why does it have to take that long? And so the earth opened her mouth, the text says, and swallowed up the river which the dragon cast out of his mouth. Verse 17, and the dragon waxed wroth with the woman, and he went away to make war with the rest of her seed. That keeps the commandments of God and holds the testimony of Jesus. Now, he's tried to destroy the man-child, but he was caught up unto God and to his throne in verse 5 and 6. He chased him there, and he met Michael and his angels and was cast out of heaven. So he came back down to the earth in this chapter, and he tried to attack the woman. And she flew away like an eagle. He tried to drown her, but the earth swallowed up the lies, the rivers. The fella just can't win. And so he turns away, being made extremely mad at the woman. But the only way he can attack the woman now is to attack the rest of her seed. And that's what it says he done. He went after the rest of her seed. So he went away to make war with the rest of her seed. Now, I know who that first seed was, It was Jesus, wasn't it? The seed of woman, Genesis 3:15, who would destroy the serpent's head. But who's the rest of her seed? It's made very plain here. It says her seed is they that keep the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus. And so this pregnant woman in the beginning of this chapter has seed more than the man-child that was born from her. He was born out of prophecy. And here it speaks of this woman. Her seed is also those that keep the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus. Verse 17b. Now, he didn't say all those who have been baptized into Jesus worship in the building that says Church of Christ on it and don't use instrumental music and eats the Lord's Supper every Sunday. He didn't say that at all. He doesn't make war with all of those because many of those are going his way. No need to make war with those that's going his way already. He goes after the seed of the woman, the faithful. I mean, you don't fight anybody going your way. It says he makes war with those that keep the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus. Two key words, keep and hold. That's who he makes war with, those people. With you and I, if we keep and hold the testimony of Jesus. All right, let me give us a quick review here of chapter 12, and then we'll be ready next week to see the sea beast rising up out of the sea with seven heads and ten horns. And in preparation to that, you might want to go and read and look the best you can at Daniel, the seventh chapter. Because Daniel 7 is going to be the key to understanding who that beast is that rises up with seven heads and ten horns. And you make your own comparison for next week. But right now, let's review chapter 12 as to what we've seen. Number one, we saw the devil standing in front of the pregnant woman to devour her child. There is the Old Testament. He's been at war with God for 4,000 years since the beginning until the cross of Christ where he was whooped. And so there's the Old Testament. We've seen the woman deliver the child. There is the Gospels where Christ comes on the scene with salvation. We've seen the child caught up unto God and unto his throne. There is the Ascension. The one you read about in Acts 1. We've seen a warfare in heaven, which was the consequences of which the devil was cast out of heaven. We've seen the devil try to attack the church there in the book of Acts. There's the book of Acts because that's what it will present to us is the struggle that the church had. And with the strength of God and the intervention of God in many cases in the book of Acts, we see the victory and why the victory. And then we saw the devil was unsuccessful in all of his attempts. We saw him turn and make war with the rest of the woman's seed. And so the conclusion to all of it is the warfare still goes on to this day. That's a real picture in symbolic presentation. But the warfare discussed in this book of Revelation will be the one that takes place between the rest of the woman's seed and the two helpers of Satan mentioned in chapter 13. That'll be the sea beast and the earth beast. The sea beast in chapter 13, verse 1 through 11, or 12, 10. And then in verse 11, we're introduced to the rest, that other beast aspect of the beast of Rome, which was the religious aspect that demanded the emperor worship. And so you'll have the sea beast, the civil persecuting power of Rome, and the earth beast, which is false religion of Rome. Emperor worship, in other words. And so we'll save that till next week. We got through chapter 12. Is everybody still hanging in there? if you're going to attempt to understand this, and the Lord said in the first chapter that there's a blessing to those who read it. You may not understand all of it, but there's a comfort and a blessing. And we're seeing little bits and pieces comforting us all the way through, aren't we? We're the faithful of God. We're the seed of that woman, the faithful. And we have this escort by God on the wings of an eagle, where we're taken into a place of nourishment until, for a time and a half a time, till we die, in other words, and we go to our final reward. This is the 19th, huh?
Yep.
Let's stand while we sing our closing hymn.
Am I calling you to close this in a word of prayer, brother?
Yep. Number 17. Number 17. Son of my soul, thou.